This is the seventh session of Naturalizing the Language of NVC.
Welcome back, everyone. It's kind of a joy and a sadness. It's been so fun working with all of you, and I'm kind of like sad that this appears to be our last time. What I would like to do is what we usually do at the beginning, which is to hear more from people about what transpired in this past week. And I am in particular curious to hear from David because of the conversation that we had about your son. I'm wondering, David, if you have anything to share about what happened this week.
He and I both want to be together more, and so I approached him on that basis, and it worked. We were able to agree on what could have gone better in the way he spoke to me, the way we spoke to each other. But I felt a lot of satisfaction about that. The point I had been making was that sometimes it seems that empathy has to take a backseat to safety. But coming out of it, there was an important point that you helped me get, which is that we can partner together after a really rough encounter.
Yeah.
And today I was able to use the natural language without even intending to with my other son. And I really appreciate this class because even when you're not thinking about trying to apply it, a new kind of language other than the standard NVC, it's possible to do it.
Yay. Very cool. Thank you. I really wanted to hear back, so I feel very satisfied. Because, you know, many times I give people suggestions, and then I don't ever have the chance to speak with them again. So this is very satisfying to hear that it actually worked. Thank you. Anybody else, anything that you noticed this past week, any attempts that you made to use what we're learning here, any reflections you had?
This is in the nature of a reflection and kind of a reporting. I had this experience earlier in the week where I was able to totally envision myself teaching NVC from this vantage point. It's always bothered me that the way that NVC has been taught didn't fit me, didn't feel like it fit. And I always felt like I was teaching somebody else's course or something that wasn't quite me. And so I had this, it was like a flash of insight, really, Mickey, when all of a sudden it was just like all the barriers dissolved, and I had this vision of me doing it. It closed again, and I'm not in touch with that, but I am in total confidence that it will come back. And I found that what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to let go of this thing that I seem to have glommed onto that NVC is taught in a certain way.
Yes. This myth that NVC is taught in a certain way is what I hope to bust in the principle-based teaching class.
Well, I really like it. Can't tell you how appreciative I am of this class. Everything about it has been so meaningful to me.
Thank you.
Well, what I want to share, Miki, is I, too, really want to celebrate the learning and the biggest piece is being just the naturalness of it all. And right now, I'm leading a practice group with 5 women, and it's so beautiful to me to share with these women from a different place from where I learned, that being able to say to them, you know, if you can just come from a place where you have this intention to connect and you speak from your own truth, you know, these are the things that I was remembering from your class. And I shared it with these women, and everybody just kind of went, oh, we can do that. And I said, yeah, we can practice the steps in here. But let's make sure that when you're out there with people, you're really just trying to really ask yourself if you want to connect, and trying to do it from a truthful place. And there just seemed to be this real, I don't know, I certainly felt a peacefulness in me around being able to share it that way.
And excellent.
So I'm just wanting to share that, I guess, really in a way I'm kind of one of the new little soldiers in town, and I'm wanting to share with everybody that we can just really come from our hearts and really come from a place of connection, and it can still be NVC. So thank you so much.
What do you mean it can still be NVC? As if it's less than.
Well, not less than, yeah. Let me reword that. I guess what I mean by that is that learning about this, learning this language, that's what I mean by wanting to be able to use these principles. That's what I mean. Wanting to be able to use these principles to serve in that place of connection.
Yes.
That's what I mean. When I said that, that's what I mean by using NVC.
Yeah.
So thank you, because it's really freeing me up to want to not worry so much about getting it right when I'm
mm-hmm.
teaching it. So so thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank you. Great. So let's shift focus, because paradoxically, today I want us to visit the building blocks of NVC that we have been saying all along, they're just for practice. And when you talk in the world, you talk in the world. It's almost like I want to take ownership of these pieces freshly as incredibly powerful forms of practice that help us be ready for the intention to connect, for shifting out of right-wrong thinking. That's what I am interested in doing today, is learning to look at how do we benefit from the actual practice. So what I want to do is I want to do a series of very short, small groups where one by one I'm going to ask you to reflect on all the different pieces and building blocks of NVC to see what you gain from focusing your attention on that piece, so that even when you practice in connection to a sense of purpose rather than practice because that's how it's done, that's how somebody said it's supposed to be. Wondering if anybody would reflect to me your understanding of what I'm planning to do today in terms of the practice itself, because that's the focus of today, is the practice itself and how it supports the naturalizing. Anybody open to reflecting what you got from what I said?
I think that after all of this sort of freedom, you're wanting to orient us towards what the beauty in OSNR and how these principles really do serve us when we have them ingrained, and to really just become present to that in our lived experience.
Thank you. That is a big part of it. I like the way that you talked about the beauty of the OFNR, because as much as I am really trying to get everyone to just speak naturally and put your heart on your intention, I do see beauty, amazing beauty, in what Marshall Rosenberg created as a practice tool. So that is a big part of what I said. There's one other part. So you want to give it a try?
What I heard you say was that you wanted us to explore individually what we get from the different components, the observation, feeling, needs, and request, and that you want our teaching to be grounded in the benefits that we get from viewing it from this point of view. Is that what was missing?
It's pretty much this, except that I wasn't talking at all about teaching. The practice itself, it's almost like, you know, for this whole time we've been talking about principles, and I want to make the link between the practice and the principles, so that the practice doesn't appear like a constraint, rather as a tool for creating the freedom. Thank you. So what I would like you to do in your group first is to look just at practicing observations. And what are the benefits that you get from shifting your focus from evaluating and interpreting to pure observation. What do you get from focusing your attention on pure observation? How does that support you in what you want to create internally and in the world? Welcome back. I am very curious to hear what you discovered in your conversations. How does the practice of observation support you?
One of the things that I came up with is that when I use the discipline of observation, it frees me from my creative storytelling tendencies, which can cause me an awful lot of pain.
Yes.
An awful lot of pain because I have this whole thing about why this person did this, you know, what they're like and all this. So it's very helpful that way.
Yeah, because it's the stories that create the pain.
Yes.
It's not the behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. Did anyone discuss something different that you'd like to add?
One of the things that I mentioned in our group was it brought a sense of clarity that really was helpful to me. And what is some of that clarity is really focused around responsibility. That what has just happened is an action or word, and that is what I'm taking in, that is what is out there, and that anything else that happens is something that is coming from me. So it's taking responsibility for how I might feel in a moment or what mm-hmm. I might be thinking. It really sets me up for that clarity that is so helpful in helping me identify judgments and then transform the judgments into observation language.
Thank you.
In our group, we also spoke a little bit about when we're receiving something that feels like a judgment from someone else, that this knowledge of moving from evaluation to observation gives us a way to respond to that. And that even just knowing that we could wonder about the observations that led to the judgment, it keeps us out of our own defensiveness.
Yes.
And that if we're able to ask for observations and actually get that information from the other person, that it's generally very valuable information to have about what it was that we might have done or said that sparked their response.
Yeah. So here you are applying it outside of just your own self, just being empowered to ask for observations releases you from the automatic knee-jerk response to judgment. It's incredibly empowering in that way.
Yes.
Thank you.
In our group, two things. One, we get to a place of neutrality and calm, which allows us to be more resourced and choiceful about how we respond to the situation at hand. And for two of us, there's actually sort of a bodily sensation, like a physical calming that happens. Mm-hmm. This actually happens on a bodily level. Those two things kind of go hand in hand as well.
Help me out because I thought I heard only one.
One is a mental neutrality and calm.
Got it.
And the other one is actual physical.
Got it. So it's a similar thing operating on two levels.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. Did you have a sense as to why it offers you this calm?
Having the observation takes you out of the mental chatter. It makes things much more simple because you're talking about something that is observable and that's
yeah.
all. There's nothing else attached to it. So it's much easier to work with and just leave more space for you to work on, you know, your intuition can kick in and other parts of your brain can kick
yeah.
in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
One of the people in our group brought up the idea that if you are speaking to another person without evaluation, it can become the ground of your conversation. If, for example, if I say, you know, it really hurts my feelings when you yell at me and you say I wasn't yelling. If I had said instead, when you said, would you please leave me alone, then that is something that we can both agree on.
Yes.
The neutral observation can be the starting point of the connection.
Yeah. So you are now talking about a second power. It's kind of like one of the powers that observation has is internal. Most of the things that people shared so far are internal things. If I focus my attention on observation, then something changes inside of me. It can be a calm, it can be a clarity, it can be a freedom. Those are all internal states. What you are talking about now is the power of observation to create connection, because it is so much easier to establish a ground with another person on an observation than on an evaluation. Yes, I want to say that is almost always true, not always. What I mean to say, it's not like some of the time the observation doesn't establish the connection and the evaluation would. It's that some of the time even getting to a completely neutral observation is not sufficient to establish connection, because the two people have two different sets of observations. That does happen. And those are the times when I try to remember that the goal is connection. The goal is not to get to the bottom of what is true. The goal is connection. And if the observation doesn't establish the connection, I let it go and just focus on needs of creating the connection. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And that does happen. My experience has been that when I do that, when I let go of the observation and focus on connection, and then manage to build the connection, if the connection becomes solid enough, then we can go back, usually, and recalibrate the observations.
That's very exciting.
That is very exciting, and it doesn't always happen. When it happens, the reward and the satisfaction that I've had are really exceptionally high. So thank you for bringing up this piece. I'd like to shift focus now to looking at feelings. And so before we go there, I'd like to see if there's anything else that anybody wants to say or hear about observations.
Yeah, I just had a question on what you were just discussing. I was wondering if the observation that you make when you're talking with someone else, if you make it general, like in other words saying, when you said what you said, something like that, to keep from specifics that might muddy the connection.
It's not usually about such simple interactions that it happens. It's like when people have, you know, several years of conflict, and you try to bring them together, and one of them says, this all started when 3 months went by and you didn't call me back. And the other person says, that's not true. I did call you back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's like enemy images.
I don't even know if they're enemy images or people really register information differently. That does happen. We have unbelievably plastic minds. They will do anything we ask them to do, including bend truth, without us thinking that we are not telling the truth. That's getting us into a little bit of philosophy about people. We don't have to go there. Are you complete?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so now let's do the exact same thing about feelings. The question this time is, what benefit do you get from taking ownership of your feelings instead of talking about your thoughts and all the other things that we do usually? Just really, really connecting with the actual emotion that is inside of you. How does that benefit you? What does it give you?
I was just curious, Mickey, you said taking ownership of our feelings, so it was the self side, and I wondered if you were intentional in that or if you also wanted us to reflect on focusing on another person's feelings and the benefits that we get from that.
I am thinking that we would get into a separate moment of looking at the empathy end of things. You know, what do we get from focusing empathically on another person's experience? So I was thinking of having it then, and it looks like your group did it very successfully in both directions the first time. So I'm satisfied with whatever you choose to do. It wasn't my intention. Clear enough?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So let's do again 10 minutes. Welcome back. Once again, I'd like to hear from different people. What are you getting from focusing attention on feelings? How does that support your practice?
So I'm going to try to summarize what we did. In terms of what we are getting from expressing our feelings and taking ownership of our feelings, I guess I can break it down into a couple of things. Just the identifying the feelings gives us such a new understanding of what's going on inside of us,
mm-hmm.
in addition to the observation with what's going on outside of us. And then honoring our feelings is a way to begin and start to experience self-empathy,
mm-hmm.
to accept ourselves, self-acceptance.
Could you pause for a second? Because I want to digest what you've said so far. This piece about being able to separate what's outside and what's inside is so important, because in the usual way that we speak, we don't make that separation. Then that's when we bring all the internal emotional charge into trying to talk about what happened and mix up everything, either by making judgments instead of observations, or by talking about saying things like, I feel disrespected, which still mixes internal and external. So being able to really put what's outside outside and take stock of what we are doing inside that gives us the experience that we have, I really want to underline the power that that gives us, the freedom that that gives us. And the second thing that you talked about is in terms of how connecting with our feelings is the beginning of self-connection and self-empathy and self-understanding.
And even more than just recognizing our feelings, but actually holding them with tenderness, honoring them, so that we're not trying to throw them away if they're feelings we would prefer not to have, to actually accept whatever feelings are coming.
Yes.
And then the third thing was actually experiencing, really experiencing in our bodies the physical sensation of the emotion, as separate from naming it, as a deep experience that really connected us so much more with ourselves and gave us preparation for really understanding what was going on with our needs, more so even than naming the feeling, actually experiencing it in our bodies.
Yes, there is something about we are very habituated to distance ourselves from our feelings. And there's a big fight that goes on internally a lot, especially when there are intense feelings. So to be able to relax into what we're feeling is already some liberation. Thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the things that I'm aware of is that when you use faux-feeling words like disrespected or abandoned or betrayed, you are expressing a state of being victimized by someone out there, as opposed to being in touch with the feeling, I feel sad or I feel pain, that is my own feeling. I'm totally in charge of it, and I'm empowered by it.
Yeah, so that is definitely a major piece, which is that when I name my feelings by reference to what is happening outside of me, like you said, I'm not in charge of the experience. I'm at the mercy of whatever happens outside, and I don't have any power to change anything because it all happens outside of me. So this is another very definitely powerful aspect of why we want to practice connecting with feelings. Any other comments or thoughts or questions about feelings before we move to needs?
I was just going to say something that came up in our group that I thought was really helpful, that making the distinction between thoughts and feelings, the thoughts are like pointers to the feelings, which then can be pointers to the needs. I thought that was a really interesting way to put it, rather than something to just do away with. But it's important to make the distinction because it gets you to the feelings, which gets you connected to yourself and then to your needs.
Yes, and I want to say that it's essential that we don't reject our thoughts. Because if we reject our thoughts, we are not going to be able to connect with ourselves. Often what happens to people who practice NBC for a while is they start developing some idea that thoughts are bad, judgments are bad, and therefore I'm not going to have them. And so if I have a thought or a judgment, I kind of like put it aside and ask myself, what am I feeling, without looking in and through the thought. And if I don't look in and through the thought, since the charge is in the thought before it gets digested, I can actually continually ask myself, what am I feeling, what am I needing, and not get anywhere because I rejected a part of myself. That's what I'm hearing you speak to. And it's very powerful. It's a little bit like the old joke that I'm sure many of you have heard before of the person who is walking down the street and sees someone, you know, looking for something and right by the street lamp. And so they approach the person and say, what are you looking for? Can I help? And the person says, yeah, I'm looking for my keys. And where did you lose them? In the alley around the corner. So why are you looking for your keys here? Because there's light here. That's what we do. It's kind of like we don't look for the truth where it resides, which is in the discomfort of having a judgment. Thank you.
Something that came up in our group, how focusing on feelings can really bring you back into the present moment. That's something that's really powerful for me, is that when you really switch into recognizing your feelings, that you are, this relates, I guess, back to the feeling it in your body as well, that brings you back to this present moment.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. Anything else that anybody wants to add about feelings before we proceed to needs?
Feelings connect me to my aliveness. What goes on in my brain is deadly.
Why do you think that what goes on in your brain is dead?
Because I think it's just about story making. I think that the aliveness is in our bodies.
And the brain is not part of the body?
Oh, yes, of course it is.
So I take issue with the idea, with the discarding of the brain that so many people do. I really take issue with it. Don't you ever get excited by ideas?
Totally.
So why do you call that dead?
Well, yes, that's not dead, but the feeling is excitement.
Right, but the excitement is about something that's happening in your brain. So I just want to keep staying open to what I want is not to swap between thinking that our thinking is great and our feelings are bad. I don't want to swap that with saying, well, our feelings are great and our thinking is bad. I really want an integration of mind and heart. Wondering how that sits with you.
It sits very well with me. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So, next is the same exercise with needs. What is the benefit that you get from naming and connecting with your needs instead of anything else, instead of thoughts or judgments or strategies or anything other than needs? What's the benefit that you get from connecting with your needs? All right, let's go for it. Another 10 minutes. Welcome back. Let's hear, what did you connect with in terms of the benefit of naming and connecting with your needs?
I appreciate how this deeper, clearer understanding of needs has helped me to avoid what I call a tendency to do a spiritual bypass, which takes me to an unreal place. It helps me reconcile or tell the difference between this ideal I might have, a fake ideal of someone who shouldn't want acknowledgement from others. It allows me to hold the fact that I do want that, and it doesn't mean that I must have that fulfilled from the outside in order to have some degree of satisfaction or fullness or acceptance. Does that make sense to you?
It makes a lot of sense. What I'm understanding is that the focus on needs allows some sort of internal reconciliation between some idea that we shouldn't need certain things and the reality that we do. And I want to take it a step further and just say that I do not share this belief that we are supposed to not need things from the outside, because I have deep clarity that we are interdependent social creatures and we cannot fulfill our own needs without interaction with other people. And I'm wondering if that's a comfortable statement for you.
True, and there's a paradox that the understanding around needs and making requests different than demands frees me to make requests.
The word need somehow gets tied up with the idea of attachment, and that what I see that we really are called to refine internally and in how we speak to ourselves and others is that having a need doesn't mean having an attachment to making something happen. Okay.
We brought up a bunch of things in our group. I'll focus on the one that was directed towards the communication process itself with needs, and how when I'm on the receiving end of hearing someone communicate their very deepest yearnings or values and what's really important to them, it opens me up. It has a quality, a possibility to really open the other person to such a deep understanding and creating a huge connection.
So you connect with the power of needs to create connection between you and another person, wherever
yes.
it is that the need is focused on, in you or in someone else.
Yes.
Thank you. I think I want to just say something about why I see that needs connect us, because needs are what we all share. The observations that we make, the specific strategies that we like to have in our lives, really vary widely. The needs, when we get down to that level of essence, we are so much alike that it's much easier to connect.
Just being able to say, it's all right to have a need, you know, like just to recognize, you know, it's okay, have needs. Just because you feel like you should be giving to other people and so on doesn't mean you can't give to yourself. And I'm really liking that a lot.
Mm-hmm. I want to sharpen the point a little bit, which is giving to other people is one of your needs.
Yeah.
You are giving to yourself when you give to other people. If you're giving to other people, it comes from the place of the extraordinary fountain of generosity that lives in each one of us. We get blocked by all the shoulds. So
yeah.
There isn't really such a distinction, because the more we kind of like think about needs as this thing that is selfish, that is for me, the less likely we are to really relax into recognizing and accepting them. So you can dissolve this dichotomy. Giving to other people is not mutually exclusive with giving to yourself. It is a form of giving to yourself.
That's true. In Liz's group, I think one of her points that she brought up about not necessarily having a need met that I could relate to was perhaps you have a need, maybe it isn't going to be met by the person that you'd like to have it met by. That's something that I got out of what Liz said. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to not be met, but maybe you aren't going to get it met in the way that you envisage you'd like to have it met.
Yes. Enjoy your journey of deepening with this new awareness. So let me just give you one line to chew on. my friend and colleague Kit Miller says that NVC is an awareness discipline masquerading as a communication process. So enjoy that as you learn.
Thank you.
Okay.
I actually wanted to respond to what you were just saying, what you're just talking about in terms of interdependence and giving to other people is giving to ourselves. I really, really resonate with that. And I also think that giving to ourselves is giving to other people. When we really get in touch with our needs, all of a sudden we're so much more able to connect with other people. We're in a better vantage point to give and to recognize that interdependence.
Yep, thank you. Anything else that anybody wants to add about needs before we proceed? Yes.
I just have a couple of things that came up for me. When I've been able to get in touch, really deeply in touch with what Robert Gonzalez calls the beauty of the need, I really felt this connection to the life source. It's this calmness. It's this, he uses the word radiance, and I didn't know why he was using that word for a while, but I think it really does describe what I've experienced sometimes when I've really been in touch with a need, even if it hasn't been met at the time. So that's the first thing I wanted to mention. And another thing is, one of the things we talked about in group is when you're recognizing needs as universal, and when you finally possibly get in touch with the needs of someone with whom you're holding an enemy image, that recognition of their needs can be a doorway to compassion, at least it has for me, that the enemy image dissolves as the compassion just rises up in me as I'm recognizing this beautiful connection that we have in terms of our needs.
Thank you. I want to say one more thing, and I have nothing to add to what you said about the enemy images. I love how you said it. And I want to add just one more thing about the first thing that you said about the connecting with the source of life. And here's how I see it. And I'm going to really try to do it without using spiritual language. And that's on purpose because it doesn't connect for everyone. I want to say that whatever it is that anybody believes, there is something mysterious about life that is beyond adding up cells and particles and atoms and neurons and all of that. There is some kind of vibrancy to the experience of being alive. And that strength of it, that force of it, lives in us in the form of needs. In other words, life is the ongoing, incessant process of wanting. And that's the beauty that I see in the needs. It's that intense flame of aliveness that brings us to want. Just watch a small child and you see it before it gets extinguished. So thank you for bringing that up. All right. So for the next two pieces, let's now go back into the groups and this time look at what is the power that you get from requests. How does the practice of requests support your ability to live this consciousness that we've been talking about for all these weeks? And I want you to look at two aspects here. One is making requests and not demands and how that supports you. And the other is the concreteness of making practical, concrete requests. How does that support you? That's what I want you to focus on. Welcome back, everyone. I want to hear just from a few people.
As far as making requests are concerned, it's something that I don't really do very well, and it put me onto the fact that there's something inside me that really, it's like, you should do what I want, and if you don't, then it's something like you don't love me or something like that. So it's put me onto this so I can work it. So I appreciate this process.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very, very difficult for many people to actually make requests at all. And sometimes what we do is suppress it and then get to a point of where there's so much intensity that we actually make a demand. And in some funny way, it's easier to make a demand than a request because it's not vulnerable.
Right.
Thank you.
I just want to acknowledge you once really guided to make connecting requests that were catered to what you're really curious about or most fearful of, or just make it tailor-made for what's really alive for you in some way.
Yes.
And that has been just, my practice was like OFM, and it's R wasn't even on the radar. And so that's been huge. That's really enticed me to start playing with R.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two things regarding the not demands issue. One of the things we came up with was that making requests allows us to hold the other person's needs as precious as our own.
Bingo.
The second thing, the concreteness, actually allows us to really take responsibility for getting our own needs met.
I love it. Thank you. What I love is just the reaffirmation that I don't really need to teach you anything. Just guide and cajole and create the structures, and you learn everything on your own. Thank you. Okay, one last dip is the same thing. How do you benefit in terms of how you want to live from focusing your attention on empathy with another person? Thank you, everyone. So I am curious, now that we've done this whole thing, I want to kind of like take a step back. We've looked at all the different things, all the different components. And the question that I have is, can you see how giving your full attention to the meticulous practice in the practice settings can support your consciousness outside the practice setting if you look at the practice in this way? Does anybody want to reflect on this briefly before we close? I want to know how many of you, on the basis of what we did today, feel more motivated to do the grinding practice, the real practice of learning and practicing the tools in order to support your consciousness. How many of you feel more motivated? If you do, please press 4. Thank you. I'm really, really delighted to see this, because I see this as a complete paradox, that the practice is not what it's about and the practice supports what it's about.
I'd like to use the analogy in terms of how I think practice is so vital. I want to use the analogy of dance. When you're a dancer, you practice, you focus on every little movement, on doing it this way and not this way, and this way and not this way. And practice is all about bringing your body and your mind into precision, so that when you go out to dance, it flows. And it is natural, and it's just inside of you, and it becomes you. And that's the way I think of practice for NVC. That practice group is the practicing the dance, and going out into life is dancing.
Thank you so much. I'm going to incorporate this metaphor. Thank you so much. And I just want to hear from one or two people. Overall, what did you get from this class? What's one thing that stands out to you? I'd like to hear it before we conclude this chapter of our shared life and disperse with our new consciousness. Anyone has anything you want to say before we end?
This course has just really put me into the idea that it's the consciousness that really matters, and it's a dramatic change for me.
Thank you.
Mickey, I have absorbed you, Mickey Cashtan. I've absorbed a lot of your spirit and energy, and I love it. I've taken you in.
I've always wanted to have a clone. Thank you.
I feel inspired and the hope that this NVC consciousness and language just is going to be so much more accessible to people. And I learned, especially in tonight's class, a way that I could see of sharing with others. And so I'm really grateful. Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you.
It's re-grounded me in the principles and consciousness of NVC in the earlier classes. And then today just really reminded me of the importance of the fundamentals. I just feel really re-inspired as well as re-disciplined.
Oh, thank you. Perfect.
In one of the first sessions, I loved it when you said, just try it and take the fallout with care.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, everyone. I really love this class. It's kind of like a tug for me to go and leave you, and I hope we cross paths again. Bye-bye.